jacket green.
All right.
Didn't Hedy Youngman finally just die like a couple years ago?
No, he's been gone for longer than that.
Now, well, he was in Goodfellas, though. I remember that. I guess Goodfellas came out 15 years ago, though.
Yeah.
All right, well, anyway. Hedy Youngman?
That was 15 years ago.
I guess 15 years.
Longer than 10.
15 years is... On the one hand, that's just a small sliver of time when you're as old as Hedy Youngman. On the other hand, really, when you are as old as Hedy Youngman, just every single passing moment is just... That's where the Grim Reaper's just swinging and just, you know, coming within inches of your face every morning.
All right.
All right. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. It's 1 minute and 42 seconds after the hour of 11 in this, the month of September, the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970. Solid State Radio. Here's the phrase of the day, transcribed by me as she said it. Sarah Dillon this morning, 10:25. My head was so itchy, I finally had to wash my hair.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I thought we could have our private off-the-air conversation.
Sexy.
It's clean now. I really thought I could make it another day. And
you're going for a record. Is there some sort of gold medal in filth that you're trying to obtain?
No, but every time I wash it, the color fades. It just gets me closer to having to recolor it. It's a money saver. And plus, if I change my part every day, then you can't really see how greasy it is.
Yeah. Yeah, some people pay good money to put grease in their hair. You're getting it for free.
Exactly. I don't need to pay for any of those fancy products.
I love the idea that you save. That should be on that money-saving tip for recently fired people. Stop washing your hair. Save money by no longer bathing.
So I figure out, no, I take a shower every day, but I figure I'm on a six-day cycle. By day six, my head's really itchy, and I've got to wash my hair. That's all.
You heard it from the source, kids.
Thanks, Chris.
That's what I do. At least you don't get emails like this one. This is from Hans. Rick. Oh, by the way, there's another new direction spotting. Rick, first of all, on the CNN politics page, there's a story on the Democrats saying that the recently leaked intelligence report indicates a need for a new direction. Pleased to be interviewing Lisa Goddard on this topic and forcing her to say new direction repeatedly. And then he gets... What is that? Oh, okay. That's an arm. You can't put things like that on the screen. Also, I've been thinking about your medical hair restoration quandary. He says, I think you should send Tim Riley to all your meetings wearing a hat that says surrogate and a little camera and earpiece. No touching! That's fantastic. All right. Oh, good God almighty. All right, 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. If you'd like to engage with us electronically, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Reminds when I was a kid, my friend John and his sister went a whole summer without brushing their teeth. They were having a contest to see who could go the longest without cleaning their mouths.
Me not washing my hair for a couple days reminds you of kids not brushing their teeth for an entire summer.
It does indeed. It does indeed. I think she finally gave up after like 6 weeks. I think she finally buckled. She had to give her teeth a good scrubbing finally. They were a poor and stupid family. All right, there you go. I also had, but, well, I'll get back.
Well, you don't know how refreshing it is if you don't wash it. It's just like if you don't shave for a while, how it's, like, more refreshing.
It's like if you don't pee for 4 or 5 days. And then it's really...
It's never felt cleaner.
Have you ever read... You're a Twin Peaks fan. Did you ever read the, the hell is that book? Not The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer, but the... It's the diary of Agent Cooper.
Yes, Special Agent Dale Cooper.
Yeah, and he has this... I remember he has this observation. I read that a long time ago when it first came out. I remember he had this observation where he had this experiment where he decided not to urinate for as long as he possibly could. And he went like 2.5 days without peeing while intaking water normally. And his entries start to become like, I am seeing drinking fountains everywhere. And then I'm pretty sure that it ends with him saying that he then went to take care of his business finally. And I think it took like a full 9 minutes. And he noted that were it not for the discomfort experienced beforehand, that would be a safe substitute for sex. So there you go. That's what you make me think of. Entries in Agent Cooper's diary. Okay. It's 503-733-2970. Also, with your comments, your clarifications, your what have you, you can email us if you'd like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick@rickemerson.com. Do you ever do that thing where you bite your tongue or like your lip when you're eating and you feel stupid because you've had your mouth your whole life and you ought to know how to use it by now? And then you just... Do you ever do this where you're eating? I did this morning, so I'm bringing it up. Where you're eating and you'll actually bite down on the fork sometimes. That makes you feel dumb. And then you get that weird teeth on metal sort of...
Something happened to your... Oh, wait. No, never mind. It looks like you had a black space where one of your teeth were...
I don't believe so. No. Now,
right, smile.
Now I'm afraid to open my mouth.
No,
No.
Okay.
My teeth seem to be fine. Are they fine?
Yeah, they're okay. It was weird. I was like, is Rick missing a tooth?
Yeah.
Has he always been missing a tooth?
I've
never noticed that he is.
I've become a witch. No, but I did that thing this morning where I was chewing up. Quit staring at my mouth. Your hair's still shiny and gross.
It's very good smelling and beautiful.
We should have like...
Paul Halama even said he liked my lid today, which I guess is a code for hair in Paul Halama land.
Yeah, I don't think that means what he thinks it means. I think that's your hat. Isn't your lid your hat? And the kids say, I got a new lid. Isn't that a hat or drugs?
Ted Danson has a new wig or a lid.
Does he have a gray wig? Is Ted Danson's hairpiece finally...
It barely looks like him anymore.
Yeah, but see, he's doing the smart thing where he's got...
He looks handsome.
He's
fake
doing the
hair,
Bob Barker thing.
But he's got... See, that hair is still fake because he's bald. But at least he's got fake hair that looks real now because it's gray.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't have like the full-on... because... Like in the Cheers era, that was a wig, full-on wig. But you can get away with that when you're like 30-something, 40-something. You got to be 70, you got to ditch that. Apparently that show's really good. Carlin was going on about it.
I did watch Studio 60 last.
Man, what did you think? How great was that? How fantastic was that?
Fabulous.
I should have known, by the way, that they would end with something like that big production number, because Sorkin's just such a nerd for musicals. There was this famous episode of The West Wing where there was an entire subplot, which is like way too brainy even for me. It was like 44 minutes of subplot about a particular phrase and whether it came out of Pirates of Penzance or HMS Pinafore, which like I couldn't possibly care less about, but he could because he's a big drama nerd. So anyway, I had some point to make, but anyway, blah, 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 email, yada, yada. Big announcement coming up today. I was just talking to Tim Riley about this, speaking of comedians who aren't dead. Much to the surprise of the news department here. We have to go revise our files now. We'll keep their obituaries on file. So we have a big announcement about a comedy program that's coming to town that we're going to be involved in. So we have a big announcement about that. What newspaper are you reading?
This is USA Today.
Did I just see an ad for American Top 40? No. One page back. The bottom of the right-hand page.
Yes, it is. American Top 40 with Ryan Seacrest. Heard on 400 stations.
I get these confused.
Which one music charts.
But which one was hosted by...
Casey Kasem did American Top 40.
Okay, then what about Shadow Stevens? Does Shadow Stevens still do one?
I don't know, but he's probably still around.
Probably. All right. Well, anyway, it's 503.
I haven't listened to this program since the 80s.
Oh, American Top 40. When did Casey Kasem quit doing that?
I think it was forced. Ryan Seacrest forced everybody to step down from their jobs.
With a gun. Kasem probably still owns it. He just sits around and does a whole lot of nothing. Just sits around, waits for the checks to roll in. Is it possible that children still sit around and wait for somebody to tell them what the 40 most popular songs in America are?
I don't think so.
I can't imagine anybody is. I used to structure my Sunday mornings around Casey Kasem and the American Top 40 countdown, and then later on, I would structure my Saturday mornings around. How sad! I would structure my Sunday mornings around Casey Kasem. Boy, that statement
I would on Saturdays. That was our cleaning day before we could go out and do anything fun, so we'd have to clean our rooms, and I'd listen to that.
That one statement explains so much about all of us. And on Sunday nights, I would structure around Shadow Stevens, which is always creepy because he would end the show by saying, "This is your best friend, the Shadow." Which is sort of sad because it really was true. It was true. Just me and the radio.
Your best friend.
It was just me and Shadow Stevens and the voices in my head. All right. Well, I had stuff to get to, but is this? I don't believe Mailman Chris is calling. I think he's dead. I just realized that I was waiting for something to happen and I couldn't think of what it was.
It's a revenge of the cat.
I think his immune system has finally just failed. All right, so there you go. No Mailman Chris today. Well, who is this? Let's, it's Dan from New Zealand. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, what's up, brother?
I can be a stenographer for today.
I thought you were going back to New Zealand.
Yeah, that's on the 10th of October.
Oh, okay, so you're here until then. All right.
It's the day after my birthday, Rick.
So you'll be here for Sarah's birthday.
Sweet.
All right.
You got out of push-ups yesterday because Mailman Chris was sick. You did not do the Weekend Geek, and you did not do the sword tail.
You know, this is a lot of Tuesday morning quarterbacking. I don't really know.
You
that,
know. Fine, live with your lie, Rick.
I'm fine with that. I don't know that you're... I can live with my deceit. I don't really know that you're in a position to make that judgment call.
Well, I wrote everything down that you did yesterday, and there's no Weekend Geek. So.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can really understand what you're saying, so it doesn't really matter.
I say it should be a wash then.
Yeah, well.
And say it should be 60 push-ups.
Moving on. Here's what we're going to get to today.
I think so, too.
We have the penis wash today.
Penis.
Things that sound funny when said by a guy from New Zealand. We have why you should never play with a shotgun.
Crazy shotgun.
Why you should never play with Bacardi rum. We have some baseless rumor and unfounded speculation about Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, okay.
All right, it's too many syllables. There's gloss right over it. Gary Baumgarten and Lisa Goddard.
Alrighty. That's not too much. Today.
All right, there you go. No, I'm aiming low. And then we will.
The Weekend Geek?
Yes, I will get to the Weekend Geek. I will do that today.
As opposed to playing it on Friday as usual.
No. Okay, look, there's no need to be caustic about this. It's not easy what I do. I'm trying. This is so much to do, so little time.
Alrighty.
All right, thank you, sir.
Okay, I'll call back around 3.
All right, there you go. There's Dan from New Zealand in the stead of Chris the Mailman. The weird thing is, how did Dan know to call? I should have asked
him
that.
Why is it that people from New Zealand have British accents when we who live closer to Britain do not?
Well, you kind of do. See, that's the thing is, you people from New England. That's the thing is, if you listen to... Now, somebody told me this one time, since we're totally off the track. Because if you listen to people in New England...
Yeah.
And I'm not really able to do this because I live in America, so it's hard for me to sort of put my brain in neutral and sort of view it objectively. Mm-hmm. But somebody told me, because if you live in New England, that's kind of a British accent, isn't it? Sort of a faded British accent. Like people in Boston.
Well, that's a different accent entirely from people who live in New York.
I suppose. Well, somebody told me one time that people who live in the very deep south, that accent we think of as being very southern, that is in fact very close to a European accent. And I think that's a little bit of retrofitting. I think that's people in the south trying to make themselves sound less stupid by saying that it's a European accent. I don't think that's true at all.
And there are different New England accents, and you can tell someone's social status in life by listening to their accent.
You can tell if they're a serf. Is that true? What are the distinctive characteristics?
You had that Kennedy Harvard accent.
Now, is that a rich accent? That's an upper crust accent?
I would say so.
The yod.
And then you have the working class accent, which is much more nasal.
And is that sort of a, use guys, get off. Well, we're all going to the donut shop, and then we're going to go see Ginny the Chin.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
More than that.
I don't know anything. Here, can I just tell you this? I don't even know where New Zealand is. I couldn't find it on the map.
It's down in the Pacific past Australia. It looks like a horse. It's like cut in half. It looks like something chasing a horse. That's what the continent of New Zealand looks like.
The American educational system at work, ladies and gentlemen.
That's the easiest way to find it. It looks like something chasing a horse.
Okay.
Find it on the map.
I know that other people use this. And so other people use the sort of iffy, longitude and latitude to find things. Mm-hmm. We just look around and you see something that looks horse-like. Well, okay, so there you go. So we got all that. Gary Baumgarten, by the way. Here's the good thing about Gary Baumgarten. Right in our wheelhouse today, he's talking about David Guest. David Guest, who was beaten by Liza Minnelli.
And she got away with it.
Which is fantastic. I mean, I'm not saying you should beat people, but I mean...
Well, he was asking for it.
Really?
You get married to Liza Minnelli. What do you think it's going to be?
That's what I'm saying. Liza Minnelli, who, I mean, you just... And listen to this.
I mean, she beat him with chair legs.
I mean...
Is there any bigger whack job on the face of the earth than Liza Minnelli?
I mean, that's...
When she was born, her mother's on every drug and alcohol. Imagine a bunch.
That's what I'm saying. Please, let's
imagine what that pregnancy must have been like.
Let's be very clear about this. We're not trying to make light of domestic assault.
No.
We're really only making light of domestic assault against David Guest by Liza Minnelli.
Right.
It's a very specific kind of humor.
Right.
And really, you want to talk about, I mean, Liza Minnelli, and you're right about that, you want to talk about a reverse pedigree. Boy, man, she just came out, she came out of the chute just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't even imagine the sort of drugs that she was on at birth. So there you go. Guest claims that she beat him so badly during alcoholic rages, he had to be hospitalized. And this implies, here's the other thing, this implies it happened multiple times. How many times as a man, and I'm not going to, this is not the place for me to speculate about David Guest and his private life, but I'm just saying,
I mean, she has the strength of a samurai.
Liza Minnelli has an ox of a woman. Strength of a samurai. How many times as a man must one be beaten by Liza Minnelli before one draws a line inside oneself and says, this says, I have had enough? Well, we'll find out. All right, so that, plus a big announcement about a comedic show coming to Portland. Man, I'm telling you, it's a thing to go right on the wall next to the Don Rickles photo. Fantastic. I think we ought to get a whole series of us with comics in bathrobes. That ought to be our thing. Because I got the photo of me and Clyde with Rickles. And unfortunately, see, Tim, you didn't get your picture with Rickles. I tried to track you down, but we had missed each other.
You know what happened? There was a rumor, and it turned out to be false. And this happens every time we have a promotion. It'll take you 2 minutes to get in because nobody's going to show up.
Sure.
So yeah. I get there. 5 minutes, and I believed it for once, which was bad on my part.
Was
there was a
out.
Line stretching outside the door, and it took me like 30 minutes to get inside.
Yeah.
And you guys are already sitting down by the time I got there.
People from three counties came to see Don Rickles. No, it was packed.
It was a long ride to get out there.
Two nights sold out, and you drive all the way through Otis and so forth.
I mean, yeah, so dangerous road in the States.
It was great. They hustled Clyde and I backstage and, you know, just shook hands with the man, and and I've told the story before, but it was so great. This Rickles bathrobe, I had to put this on the website. I scan it, put it on. It Rickles in the bathrobe, like over the tux. That's style right there. That's the thing you don't see anymore. The bathrobe over the tux with a cigar. The only thing that was missing there, Clyde and I had actually brought our own cigars to have for the photograph, which I will do. I'll do for this next one. Anyway, so we'll make that announcement later on and so forth. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely, talented, and newly scrubbed Sarah.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm just
you
saying.
You make me sound so dirty. You know I take a shower every day.
I don't know that. I have only your word to go on. I believe that you shower every day, most of the time. Except for those days.
Unless I'm running late.
I, for example, did not shower last night, nor this morning.
I know.
The last... don't know. No, I reek of bad
cigarettes.
We're
all in a very small room together.
No, it's true. And I... No, we went to Dante's last night. We did the... You know, because Clyde did the Ground Zero Lounge. And I just got home all late. And, you know, that thing. And I had to watch Studio 60. And by the time it ended, it was like 1 in the morning, and the shower's like way over there. You know, and then I woke up this morning, and I'm, you know, and the thing is, working in this room, where we all just end up stinking by the end of the day anyway, it's sort of like washing before you go off to work in a sewer. You know, it's like, what's the point? I'm gonna smell like, you know, I'm gonna smell like the inside of this footlocker by the time we leave anyway. So, mind me though, when I was in high school, I had this science teacher in high school, and I won't use his name. But anybody who went to the school knows who I'm talking about. I had this science teacher who was a total whack job. Was later fired, by the way, for making acid in the school laboratory. And I believe it was for his own personal use. I don't believe he was selling said acid to school children. But this science teacher, and he taught biology. And this is the same biology teacher, by the way, who referred to a girl in our class as having, quote, birthing hips. At one point, it was the best. It was totally out of the blue. She got up to walk to the bathroom. She's like, you know, Mr. So-and-so, can I use the bathroom? Yeah, sure, go ahead. She gets up to walk to the bathroom, and she, you know, and you see her from behind. And as she's walking to the bathroom, the sentry goes, boy, those are birthing hips. It's like, what? And this wasn't in 1950. This was 1991, I think. Can't say that. Anyway, but I remember these very... We had heard this urban legend. Well, we thought it was an urban legend. We had heard about this teacher in advance. And someone... You know, like you hear stories from the upperclassmen about certain teachers. Like, there's always one... And you all know this, no matter where you went to school. There was always one teacher that was rumored to be drunk all the time. And it's usually true, by the way. If you think right now back to your high school days, there's always one teacher who you knew was drunk. There's one teacher who's always sleeping with another teacher. There's one teacher that can't keep his hands off the girls or boys. You know, these are all things you know. There's one teacher who's, you know, supposedly high all the time. We heard about this teacher who did not bathe or did not wash his hair in any way. And we always thought it was false. And they told us, they're like, yeah, Mr. So-and-so doesn't bathe. And we thought they were screwing with us. And at one point in class, I know there's a free couple minutes at the end of a period, and somebody, you know, he said, do you have any questions, class? He was like this, and he had a ponytail. I should have given it away right there. A ponytail and like a macrame, like a woven belt. And he said, does anybody have any questions about anything? And one of the kids in class, who was just one of those smart aleck kids, which, it was not me, but one of those smart aleck kids who just will say anything. He's one of those kids that will just say anything. He just doesn't care. And he actually raised his hand and he said, someone told us that you don't wash your hair. Is that true? And the teacher copped to it right there in class in front of everybody. And he explained to us very calmly in his own weird, hippie, insane, crunchy Air America fashion that he did not bathe and did not wash his hair because, as he put it, the body cleansed itself. So it wasn't a thing he needed to help along. He felt that nature provided all the cleaning he needed. So he would just go weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks without. And man, you would know it too. Because he'd come along to help you with some of the project you were working on. And man, the funk coming off of him, it was like a marching band. It was bad. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, believe it or not, Condi Rice is going after Bill Clinton. This should be a good one. So she should pick her battles wisely, but apparently she thinks she can make it through this.
It's all going to end with making out.
Mm-hmm. George Clooney says he's not running for public office, even though it appears that he might be doing so. And a jackass patron lights toilet paper on fire at an Oregon theater following a showing of that motion picture. And a boy playing with a gun amputates his finger.
Well done.
Oh.
There you go. That's all coming up. By the way, the first indication that somebody is running for office when they deny that they're running for office or when they will not confirm it. And anyway, did you guys hear any of that Oberman sound last night about the... I got some of it later on. I have some of the Keith Oberman stuff from last night when he was talking about the Clinton on Fox, which is fantastic, which has already entered. Not unlike that installment of our program wherein Peter Carlin was talking about, quote, news, end quote, woman Rebecca Webb at Kink. That thing of Clinton on Fox, that has already entered the pantheon of legendary television moments. Everybody's already, I mean, that's already become a thing that everybody is talking about. So we got that. Oh, I got the worst obituary ever. Somebody sent this, I don't know where this is from. Somebody sent this to me this morning from the DenverPost.com. Worst obituary ever. Oh, and there's going to be they're going to be casting for a reality TV show in town. And finally this. I'm just going to read this one email, and then we'll break here, and we'll come back with the bottom of the hour. We have, is it Ed McCarthy? Who is it? Who the hell are we talking? Gary Baumgarten. Bottom of the hour.
Yeah, Gary, then Ed, then Lisa.
I've got this from Ron in Beaverton. Subject line, George W. Bush, Comedy Gold. Rick. Today I was listening to K-Hits, which is our sister station right here. Today I was listening to K-Hits between 3:38 and 3:42 in the afternoon, and I found myself listening to Walk This Way by Aerosmith. I heard that yesterday. That station makes no sense sometimes. I like K-Hits a lot. I mean, it's a fine station. They play some stuff. There's some crap that just does not make any sense occasionally. Because it's supposedly the hits of the 80s and 70s and 80s, and then they were playing like some Cheap Trick song from 1992. Anyway, the DJ came on and said that George W. Bush was at a gathering a few nights ago and was karaokeing the following song. Let me ask you this. Just... of all of the songs of the rock era, what would you think, of the songs that could conceivably be at a karaoke night, what would you think is the single most inappropriate song for George W. Bush to karaoke? I don't mean inappropriate in a sense that
he's...
No, I realize this, as I'm saying this now, this is a bit of an open-ended question. I'm not talking as inappropriate in some sort of sexual context. I mean, really, when it comes to the message of an American rock song, a classic American rock song, what do you suppose the single most inappropriate rock song for George W. Bush to karaoke would be?
Did he sing American Pie?
No, but you're sort of in the same ballpark.
Uh-huh.
Classic American band, classic American song, a song that is very powerful, very, very meaningful.
Was it something on the Forrest Gump soundtrack?
Yes. Yes, it was. Well guessed, by the way. Do you have any idea what song it is?
I can't think of the name. I have an idea.
We'll reveal it after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Back after this. Don't go nowhere. Emerson Show. All right, so this is a guarantee here that we'll follow through on. This email says, Rick, today I was listening to your sister station K-Hits, and the DJ said that George W. Bush was at a gathering a few nights ago and was karaoke-ing the following song. And then he revealed the name of the song. And he said, I cannot believe how inappropriate this is. What would convince George Bush that it was a good idea to karaoke this song? Let me read a couple of the guesses here. Rick.
Did I guess it right?
Was it Hypnotized by Notorious B.I.G.? No, it was not. No, let me just read some of these. Nor was it Hey Yeah. No. Nor was it Do You Think I'm Sexy. Nor was it War. And it was not... Thank you, David. No, it was... Thank you, David Kemp. No, it was not 18 in Life by Skid Row. Sarah Dillon, you got a guess?
Yeah. I believe the song he sang was Fortunate Son.
Yes, you are correct. And I don't know...
I just heard it. I heard it on the Forrest Gump soundtrack, and just I can hear it coming out of his mouth.
It doesn't sound like it can possibly be true.
Yeah, but it's so appropriate for him. Come on.
It can't be true, and here's why.
I want to hear him doing a duet like with Chaney, Don't You Want Me.
What?
Him doing the Don't You Want Me duet.
By Human League? Oh, Don't You Want Me?
Or him and Laura. Yeah.
Okay. Here's why this can't possibly be true. Because God couldn't like me this much. I have not been good enough in my life for there to be anywhere. Because here's the thing. Anything that has ever been done in the last 10 years is on video somewhere. It's on video. It's on audio tape. It will come out eventually. So I'm telling you this right now. I mean, if you can find this, I don't know what I have. What do we have to offer? Oh, we have... You know what I do have? I do have copies of... Is it Revenge of the Sith? I can't remember. I got some Star Wars DVDs that just came in as well. It might be original trilogy stuff. Don't hold me to any of this. It might be original trilogy DVDs, but I'm not entirely sure about that. I got to go back and check. We actually got some stuff to give away. I'm just saying, if this is true, and it can't possibly be. You know what? We work with the guy, the DJ. It was yesterday between 3:38 and 3:42. So we got to figure out who the jock was on K-Hits and find him. That would be fantastic. That would just be worth its weight in gold. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, live from New York City.
I love New York City. Oh, yeah. New York City. I love New York City. Oh, yeah. New York City.
Gary Baumgarten joining us now on the Rick Emerson Show. Gary, how are you, sir? Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I have to pick up the... hello, that was me. I hadn't picked up the phone.
I said that was more energy than I could muster. That's fantastic.
If only you'd been there to respond to it. If only I'd remembered to press the button. Hi, how you doing, man? How are things in the city that never sleeps, sir?
It's beautiful. It's 75 degrees. It's sunny and not humid. It's just a gorgeous day.
Let me ask you this. Have you heard the story that George W. Bush was singing Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater Revival somewhere?
No, I just heard it on your air for the first time. Isn't that a stitch?
Now, see, but here's the thing. I don't know that it's true. I'm not saying that it's... Apparently, it was reported this was something that was on the air, one of our sister stations. So
maybe it's in, one of those myths or urban legends,
Because it just... Here's the thing about George Bush singing Fortunate Son is not only does the deity above not like me enough to make that happen, but... I cannot imagine. I mean, George W. Bush strikes me as the kind of guy that is handled very closely by his entourage, by his people, because they know that, and you can spot this whenever he has to give some sort of extended or impromptu speech somewhere, whenever he has to speak extemporaneously. If you watch George Bush's people really closely when he's speaking, you will see this look sort of dart across their faces. And the look comes at the moment when he gets off the page. You know what I mean? When he gets off copy. So he will sort of...
Especially now that Tony Snow is his press secretary. They've been managing the media just unbelievably well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you see him speak publicly, he will sort of work his way through the script or the copy or the teleprompter. And somebody will ask him something that is not written, to which the answer is not written down in front of him. And he will... And this is not a partisan thing, because, Reagan, for example. Reagan, it doesn't matter. Reagan, that guy could be under attack by pit bulls and would still speak, with just absolute authority and poise and confidence. George W. Bush doesn't have that ability, and he will get off the paper occasionally, where he will look up and he'll start to sort of freestyle it, and you can see his people begin to panic a little bit because they know that that way lies disaster. So I cannot imagine, given sort of George Bush's somewhat a questionable military history that anybody associated with his administration would let him get behind a microphone and sing Fortunate Son. So that if that's out there, that's worth its weight in gold. So what does one say about David Guest and Liza Minnelli, Gary Baumgarten?
One must say that that is a dysfunctional relationship. And, you know, you got to figure that when the best man is Michael Jackson and the maid of honor or matron of honor is Elizabeth Taylor, you know, it ain't a match made in heaven.
Seriously.
Sure.
No, it's just that man's just one big freak parade there. So how long? Let's back up for a moment. Liza Minnelli is how old?
60, I believe now.
60. Really? Only 60?
Yeah.
Oh, that's some hard living she's had. It looks like her tree has a few more rings in it than that. But, you know, okay, well, let's accept your figure of 60. And David Guest is how old?
I believe he's younger than her, right? He's like her boy toy, right? I'm not sure his age.
You know, and just that the idea of Liza Minnelli having a boy toy, and then the idea of that boy toy being David Guest. I mean, and who is he? I mean, what is it he did before they met? Where is he from?
You know, I don't even know the background of that. I do know the allegations in the lawsuit that was dismissed, and that was that she would get into these drunken stupors and beat him up. And as a result, he claimed head injuries that resulted in having vertigo and headaches and all kinds of weird things happening. And so he sues her. First of all, my first question is, you stayed with her. Why?
Well, that's my thing.
What is going on?
How many times does one have to be beaten by anybody before you finally figure out you're to leave? And secondly, if you're a man, you're being beaten by your wife. And thirdly, if you're a man being beaten by Liza Minnelli, I mean, it's just the whole thing just sounds ludicrous on the face of it.
Right. And so basically what happened was she had better lawyering than he did because her legal team came up with an analysis from a medical expert who said, look, this guy is suffering from shingles, and that's why he's acting the way that he is, you know, with these headaches and this vertigo and all these problems, and it's not as a result of any beatings that she inflicted upon him. And now his team says, well, you know, they didn't counter any of that. They didn't rebut it at all. But now they're going to appeal the decision by the judge to dismiss the $10 million lawsuit, and that's not over because she is now filing a countersuit claiming that because of all the bad publicity she got over these allegations, she hasn't been able to land any good gigs, and so she's suing him.
I guess, okay, my thing, first of all, is, I mean, I'm not, whatever, the court dismisses it or whatever, is that, did he ever go to the hospital, did he ever call the cops when this alleged beating by Liza Minnelli took place?
It wasn't just one beating, allegedly, it was a series of beatings. So, you know, how often the police were called, and even if they could show that there were beatings, you got this medical evidence that would indicate that his symptoms are not as a result of the beating. So, I mean, me, if a person is throwing lamps at me, male or female, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge and, you know, figuring it out later. I'm not going to stay there and accept the assault.
I guess my question is to be, at what point would you get to where you wanted to go out in front of a camera and say publicly that you were being knocked around by Liza Minnelli?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Well, I mean, if it got you a $10 million judgment, maybe you would.
Yeah, I suppose. So the next thing is that she's suing him, and so we're not going to see the end of the circus for quite some time.
There'll be plenty of us who wag our tongues at for a long time to come.
I'd like to think that during the actual trial that he could get her annoyed enough that she really would punch him in the face right there in the middle of this. I don't know if you were an Arrested Development fan, but this would explain why. That might be because Liza Minnelli's character on Arrested Development had vertigo. And so I wonder if that's some sort of a backhanded joke about David Guest. That would explain a whole lot, actually.
Right,
so.
Maybe he got the idea from the movie.
Maybe. Hey, let me ask you this real quickly. There was this class action lawsuit that's being filed by a bunch of... What is it? Is it by a bunch of the smokers and they're filing a lawsuit over... But it's not the typical smoker cigarette company lawsuit, right? This is over light cigarettes?
Right. Actually, there have been a number of lawsuits filed like this, but what makes this one very interesting is that it has been certified by a federal judge here in New York as a class, which means that the nine defendant tobacco companies are exposed by, you know, potentially millions of dollars in damages should the plaintiffs prevail. So basically what they're saying is that back when light cigarettes were marketed initially, they at least implied in their advertising that the cigarettes were safer to smoke than regular cigarettes, and that the tobacco companies knew that to be a lie, and so people made decisions to purchase those cigarettes and suffered economic loss. They're not saying they suffered medical harm. They're not saying that there were wrongful deaths as a result of it. They're saying that they purchased them based on false presentations so that they suffered economic loss. And what would happen is that if they prevailed, each member of the class wouldn't get a lot of money, but when it adds up into the millions of dollars.
And so my question, do they, first of all, do they sell light cigarettes still? Is that even a thing that they sell, or they start calling them something else?
You know, I'll tell you something. When it comes to this story, and people have been asking me similar questions all day, I'm not a smoker, so I've never paid any attention.
Sarah, do they still sell light cigarettes? Well, let's ask Sarah, not that she, Sarah has the friends to smoke. She herself has no knowledge of cigarettes.
Do they sell light cigarettes?
Yeah.
Of course they do. Yeah, they sell light, ultralight.
So what is a light cigarette? What's the difference?
It doesn't have as harsh of a taste.
It's more fashionable. You know, it's a thinner cigarette, I guess. I don't know. That's why a marketing guy I talked to about this said that you're going to find that, and this is a marketing person, not an attorney, but he says you're probably going to find that a lot of the plaintiffs are going to be women because they buy these, you know, thin designer light cigarettes to smoke, you know, that, so it appeals to women. I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, I'm at a little bit of a handicap here not being a smoker, so.
All right.
But, B-U-T-T, fact of the matter is they're appealing that decision to trying to get the class dismissed, and if they do not get dismissed, then the legal experts I've talked to suggest that there will probably be some kind of an out-of-court settlement because the exposure is just way too great.
All right. Gary Baumgarten in New York City. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. There you go, my friend. Gary Baumgarten, the Big Apple. The best part during that story was seeing you just shake your head and roll your eyes as he was discussing this.
No, it's not shaking my head and rolling my eyes. It's like, it's not because it's slimmer. It I don't know. For me, most girls I know smoke Parliaments or Camels or something, you know, that are not the long. I'm actually weird because I do smoke like long cigarettes.
I thought Parliaments were a cigarette for the black community. I thought that. That's what I thought. Maybe I'm thinking of Parliament Funkadelic. I thought, isn't there some brand that's particularly marketed to the black community in America?
No.
No, it's Kool's. That's what it is. No, there's a whole thing. There was a thing in the New York Times about it. They were talking about the cigarette advertising. Yes, it's because of my deep knowledge of what it's like to be a black American. No, there's a big thing in the New York Times. They were talking about different types of cigarettes marketed to different social groups in America. Like for no Newport. Tim just came in and held up the word Rosebud. I don't know what that means.
Newports. That's a different brand of cigarettes.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't understand what we're talking about.
You know, people smoke what they want to.
All right.
And it doesn't.
So what is a light cigarette, though?
Light cigarette, to me, doesn't taste as harsh. Like if you smoke, like, Marlboro, it's really, hard on your throat. But if you smoke a lighter one, it doesn't seem to.
So is it, like, the lack of a filter? And it's not like I really care, like, I'm going to start smoking. But it's one of those things.
Well, it might be a lack of a filter, because they sell, like, filterless Camels.
So I always wonder about this stuff. This is, like, cigarettes to me are fascinating because it is not unlike, I've always talked about the end of my theory when I go to the gas station to put gas in my car, that I always just assume that there's one huge tank underneath the ground. And it's like, you know, those guys who are paying like an extra $1.15 or whatever a gallon because they want like 98 octane gas or something. I always figure that's just a colossal scam. You know what I mean? It's like when you go to the, let's see how, there are certain prominent restaurants. Often with an Italian theme. And I always assume there's just one huge bucket in the back. So, like, you know, like if you go to that, when you go to the, like an Asian restaurant at the food court, you know, at the mall, man, you go to the Lloyd Center thing, and I swear to God, I don't care what you order, it comes out and it looks like egg foo young. It doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter. Can I get the chicken with the side of whatever? And it's like a bucket of something that's sort of deep fried, and then it's got peas on the side. And she goes, okay, you want crackers? Here you go. You have crackers. There you go. And that's it. And it's all the same. So cigarettes are fascinating to me because people have such, because there's such brand loyalty, like for no readily apparent reason. I'm not saying, and this is not like an anti-smoking thing, this has to do with a lot of products, I suppose. I'm always intrigued by how people just, seemingly arbitrarily pick a cigarette brand, and then they refuse to... My dad smoked Salems, which I was told later is really the hallmark of being poor and dumb. But, man, he would just get so goddamn angry if there were no Salems at the store. Of course, he would come home with something else. Joni does this, too. Joni smokes Dunhills. And it's like, if she goes to the store and there are no Dunhills, I mean, she'll break down and she'll eventually smoke something else. Like, if all they have is American Spirit or whatever, GPC, by God, she'll go with it eventually, but I will hear about it for the rest of the day.
Yeah, American Spirits are big, too. A lot of people smoke those.
Now,
What are those pandering to, Rick? Come on, give us general stereotypes.
Greeks. No, I thought American Spirits.
Oh, God.
What?
I'm just afraid of what's going to come out of your mouth. What?
I'm simply making... Tell me it's a lie that there are not certain products marketed to certain social groups.
I don't know. Well, because...
Yes, you do. But you know.
I really don't, because like you were just talking about, I have my loyalty to... my friends have the loyalty to the cigarettes they smoke. So I'm not really... I don't pay attention to marketing for any other one.
All right. I'm simply... All I was saying is... I really wasn't going to say anything awkward. I was just going to say that it was my understanding that American Spirits were like the very, rock bottom of the barrel cigarettes. Like,
no.
If you were just like, if you were getting money from underneath a cushion.
No, those are pretty pricey and they last a really long time, which is why people like them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do you ever wonder? Never mind. Let's.
Those hurt my throat.
Okay. Let's. Steve, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going, Rick?
Hey, what's up?
The difference between a regular cigarette, a light cigarette, and an ultralight cigarette, they have little holes in the filter. So you're not drawing as much. You let the air in. You're not drawing as much, so it makes it lighter.
So is it the ratio of outside air to smoke that makes a cigarette light?
Yeah. You're when you take a drag off the cigarette, because of the holes in the filter, you're not drawing as much on the cigarette.
This is like asking, this is fantastic. This is like asking people why they tap cigarettes when they get them out of the package.
and the harder you pack them, the more the pack of it. It compacts the tobacco down, and that makes them stronger.
It does. See, but I swear to God, I had a guy tell me that the reason that he tapped the cigarettes was exactly the opposite. He's like, well, when he said it was like breakfast cereal, that during the shipping process, the tobacco settles down and gets compacted, and that he has to tap them to unpack it so he gets a more even draw.
Well, if you pack them, not filter first, but the burning tip first, that would
be a smoker. All right, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. That's Steve. Jim, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that one big difference between light cigarettes and regular cigarettes is that light cigarettes have less tar and nicotine.
Now, see, but I didn't think that was the case, because that was the whole thing about this lawsuit. Is that these people are suing over and here's the other reason why it doesn't seem like that would be true. It doesn't seem that it would be true. I'm not saying it's not, but I'm saying from my vantage point as like a guy who doesn't smoke,
uh-huh.
It doesn't. But as a guy who follows these lawsuits, it doesn't seem like they would put fewer tars and nicotines into it, because isn't the industry's whole thing that nicotine isn't harmful?
Right, right.
But so it's like, why would
like the ads I used to see in magazines? I used to say, "Oh, lower tarred cigarettes or whatever," and I believe that was for light cigarettes or ultralights.
You know what I don't understand here? Here's the other thing I don't understand. I don't understand what a tar is when you smoke a cigarette. What is tar? I mean,
that's a good question.
I just realized that now. I've been alive for 33 years. I don't know what tar is in a cigarette. I mean, because the only tar I know is the kind that they put in the road in front of my house. And it doesn't seem likely that you're... of course, for the longest time, I didn't think iron in a cereal was actually metal either until somebody proved it to me. So, the hell do I know? All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you bet.
All right. There you go. Jesse, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. What's happening?
What's up?
So, American Spirit, they're more expensive, but they're all natural tobacco. No additives, no nothing like that. So, there's quite a lot of hippies smoke them.
And so, what is... All natural as opposed to what? I mean, just like as opposed to...
It's just tobacco. If you were to go and buy just tobacco and roll your own cigarette...
So it's like one of those guys that walks around with the... it's like one of those guys that has the pouch of, drum crap?
Yeah, but even some of that will have additives, but American Spirits is supposed to be all... It even says it, all natural tobacco.
All right.
So they don't add any chemicals, anything to make it burn faster. That's why it takes so long to smoke an American Spirit, because there's nothing in there to increase the burn.
You know what fascinates me is no matter what subject we're talking about, no matter what question we bring it up, there is some pocket of the audience out there that has way too much knowledge about it. You know what I mean? Like, people will kind of poke fun at me sometimes because I know an absurd amount of knowledge about, you know, whatever, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer or something. But literally, I get the feeling that we could talk about the filter design on American cigarettes all day long, and people would be able to weigh in continually on it. So that's what makes this audience fantastic, my friend.
And the thing about Kool is
yes,
it's generally menthol are marketed towards the black consumer.
Okay, so it's not Kool's as such, but it's menthol. Okay, I couldn't remember
anything menthol.
Okay, I couldn't remember what the Times had this whole weird, because, you know, it is worth noting, I've talked about this. You do see, if you go to different cities in America, different ethnic populations, different cultural makeups, and the difference in the advertising you see is really jarring sometimes. I remember the first time I was in, God, where was I staying? I was in some hotel. I was staying in a hotel in Los Angeles. And I remember turning on this was just on whatever, like the local NBC affiliate or something. I remember turning on the television, and the first ad that came on, it was an ad that I had never in my life seen, because, you know, I'm just some idiot white guy from Washington. I turn on the television watching, you know, I'm watching like the West Wing or whatever. And the first ad just consists of, like, it was like Snoop Dogg and Ice Cube, like, walking in the front door of a house party, and Ice Cube is rapping about get your girl in the mood quicker with St. Ives malt liquor. Like, the weirdest thing. And that's when you realize that you've grown up just inside, like, an absolute wall of white bread, my friend. All right. Thank you, Jesse.
Thanks.
All right, we'll do one more here. Mike, you're on the, who knew? Mike, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
But let me just pause for a second. Here's the thing. Here's the thing about the menthol being marketed to the black community or whatever, and I'm sure there's different products marketed to different people. Do you ever wonder about this, Sarah Dillon? Do you ever wonder what community you're in that you're maybe not aware of that they're marketing to? Like what?
The like, old, like, 65-year-old ladies.
That's what I was saying. When a marketer of any product looks at Sarah Dillon, I wonder what kind of box you fit inside. That's a weird thing, because you really only notice that with other people.
Well, a lot of girls my age, well, I mean, most girls I know, at least in Seattle, a lot of girls here smoke Parliaments. I'm wondering what they're doing to pander.
It's just weird. I mean, stuff like that. It's like that conversation I had one time about, and Tim and I've talked about this, where we all grew up watching. Well, Tim didn't necessarily grow up, but we all watched MTV, and then like in the space of about a year, we all moved to VH1, and then about 3 years ago, we all started moving to VH1 Classic, and now we all just watch VH1 Classic. No one told me to do that. No, there wasn't a memo put out. Like, at no point did anybody take out there were no instructions beamed to me over the airwaves saying, and now all white men between the ages of 30 and 40 must tune to VH1 Classic. And yet we all did. You thought that every guy, every Dennis Pitzenberger type guy like myself, we all went through exactly that same step at exactly the same time. And I don't remember anybody telling me to do it. We just did it. Yes, Scotty's tapping the screen. Like sheep. It's exactly true. I have no idea how. It just kind of creeps you out when you think about it. Mike, hello, sir.
Hi. I'm not a smoker, but I am in pharmacy school, so we learn a lot about addictive medicines and things.
Okay.
And the light cigarettes are kind of a
the best part is Sarah coughing in the background.
Yeah, whatever. You know I have allergies.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't a chunky cough.
Okay, no.
Okay.
whatever you say.
Okay, thanks, Rick.
The light cigarettes are kind of a crock because all it is holes around the filter. And so when you hold a cigarette, you hold it over those holes. And so when they test these things, they put them in machines that don't cover those holes.
Oh, so you're you're not really using the filter to its full advantage anyway.
No. All you're doing is shows less tar, whatever it is, that shows up on the reading, but because they don't smoke cigarettes the same way that a person smokes them, by covering up the holes with their fingers.
Well, you're just a real buzzkill, man. You're just a real killjoy. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, there you go. Okay, this is interesting. Okay, so somebody just sent me this, and this is... It's an email about cigarettes being marketed towards certain demographics. So there are no right or wrong answers here, but I'm going to toss out the brand of a cigarette, and you tell me, like, the kind of person that comes to mind.
Oh, great. Thanks for putting me into the fire. No, how about we do that reverse?
No. It's not a race thing.
Okay.
It's not a race. I can't do it in reverse because I'm reading it right here.
I'm ready.
All right. Marlboro.
I don't know.
We're just talking about types of people here. Because these are exactly what I would think of.
Well, because I studied advertising, so I know exactly, like, what, you know, brands pander to. Like, Marlboro, isn't it like the 40-something-year-old, like, old farmer,
totally,
working man?
This is the all-American man. The all-American-type consumer, which is completely how they're marketed. They're totally marketed as the very, like, red-blooded, macho, like, America, you know, type of guy. Because it's with all the cowboy imagery. Mm-hmm. Camels. Totally, and this is just his observation.
Why don't you just read them so I don't have to guess?
You're just afraid. You're afraid.
No, it's just...
Say what's on your mind.
No, it's just too exhausting.
It's hard. Camels are marketed towards rock stars and hipsters. Totally. It's like all of those Ethan Hawke guys. All of those guys, the sort of like the Rebel Without a Cause guys, all smoke camels. And they all smoke camel straights. Virginia Slims, women older than 30. Winston's, for NASCAR fans who think Marlboros are feminine. American Spirits are for hipsters and health food junkies who still want to smoke. Dunhill's and any other import smokes are for filmmakers who have moved on from cloves, which of course are for drama fags and D&D players. So there you go. Anyway, that's from our good friend Aaron Geek in the City. He made that, which is, and that's exact. If you had made a connect the dots, I totally would have. If you'd done a multiple choice, I would have got with it exactly the same way. All right, we should break. We're way behind here. I got to nothing. Somebody's asking, can we talk about breastfeeding too? It's 503-733-2970. You stay there. The AM 970 Noon News Hour coming up later on. We got Dennis Pitzenbarger coming up later on. Lisa Goddard will be joining us as well, plus Ed McCarthy. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. You stay right there.